This is a Jeff Galloway podcast.
Welcome to 3-2-1 Go the podcast. I'm John Pelkey.
And I'm Carissa Galloway, and we're bringing you stories from start to finish to keep the everyday athlete motivated to keep moving towards the next finish.
All right, Carissa, today we have a very, very special interview. It's with Matt Bowen. Now, I know there are a few people out there who go, well, we know Matt Bowen. Well, guess what, Run Disney folks? If you take part in a Run Disney race, or have taken part in one, I should say, I guess, you know Matt Bowen because he's Matt the flag guy, Carissa. Matt carries a flag throughout the race. He raises money. He gives people an opportunity to salute the flag, run with the flag. Just a great overall guy, brings great energy, and we're really excited to talk to him because he's as ubiquitous as you and I on a race weekend.
And as we say all the time, how hard is it to run carrying something? And
I don't get it.
We're going to dive in, discuss all of that. But what I love about what Matt does is you mentioned it, the charity arm, bringing awareness to veteran suicide. And the VA estimates that 22 veterans commit suicide each day. That is a stat that we need to change. And awareness is the first step in that. So thank you, Matt, for doing that. Today in Healthier You, we're going to talk about why you might feel sick or run down after a long workout or race. I hope you guys are staying well because that dopey right around the corner. Thank you for listening to us on your long runs. Shout out to Adrian, our supporter, 26 miles on a treadmill. He says he got through by listening to our last episode. And I said, what, did you listen to it 5 times? Maybe he did. And if you did, we thank you. If you want to be a supporter, check out the show notes and let's do this.
All right, Matt Bowen, welcome to 3-2-1 Go, the podcast. It took a little bit of work to get you here, given all of our schedules, but man.
John, you say that every time. Like, nobody ever comes in and we're like, we got you scheduled in 10 minutes. It's all, that's it.
If you start a podcast, people, and you start it with more than one person, scheduling is going to be your issue. But we've got you here, Matt. We're going to talk about you. And by the way, for those of you listening who might not know, you might know him as Matt the Flag Guy if you're a Run Disney fan. But let's start here. How are you, Matt? And let everyone know, where are you?
Hey, guys. I'm great. I am in Louisville, Kentucky, where I live with my family. And yeah, things are great. And I saw Carissa at Epcot after the half marathon before the wine and dine party. And we had a brief conversation about it. And then, of course, you and I have spoken via messaging on Facebook for the last eight years.
It's always the issue.
It's
scheduling.
Me. You can just say it's me.
But
Carissa immediately started going, well, I'm going on vacation and then I've got to do this. And she like literally started counting things off on her fingers that she had to do before.
And she didn't even know about her surprise birthday cruise that her husband threw her away. So yes,
nice.
Yes, she's a and busy young lady. I'm less so, but it is great to have you. By the way, folks listening, this is just some inside baseball. The way you know that that Matt is not actually from the town in Kentucky that he mentioned is he did not pronounce it Louisville, which is how natives will pronounce it. And boy, I tell you, I've said Louisville on a microphone and I've been physically accosted, Matt. So just going to warn you, be careful.
Yeah, I know. So I grew up in Indiana, but no, you see, yeah, you're right. You do say Louisville.
Louisville.
And the way we say it here is you got a mouthful of mashed potatoes and you're trying to talk. Oh,
mashed potatoes.
Oh. Louisville. Beautiful.
Yeah, my wife is from here. I'm from Central Indiana. We lived out east when I first got into my business, and then we've lived here now 14 years, 13 years. So Hawaii.
Great area of the country. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of where we want to start, Matt, because we know you from Run Disney, but we want to about know you before. So give us a little synopsis. We don't have Riley Claremont backstory time, but like, you know, a brief synopsis of who you were before you became not just a Run Disney athlete, but a celebrated icon of the Run Disney races.
Well, thank you so much for calling me an icon. That's flattering. So I graduated high school in the 90s in Bloomington, Indiana, campus of Indiana University, the top 10 Indiana University football team for the first time in the history of the program, which is nice.
Yeah.
I joined the United States military, was in the Navy. I served in the Navy for 4 years from 93 to 97, got out in 97, went to college, and then started my family. My oldest son is 26. all the way down to 11. So I have 26, 24, 16, and 11.
Well, you were fighting against that empty nest, Mike.
Yeah.
You spread that out, didn't you?
Spread it out. And so we've lived, I'm in the medical device world as my professional job. I'm working cath labs and vascular suites, and I have for 20 years. And we've lived in Maryland, and now we live in Louisville, Kentucky. My current job has me covering the entire United States, working with our existing sales force as a national sales manager for intervention radiology products for the company that I work for. And so that's what I do in my professional life. And then in my, to give a little backstory on my athletic journey, I had gotten very, very busy with work, as we all do, and had fallen away from exercise. And I got on the scale one day and I looked down and I said, yeah, no way. And I immediately got really into exercising. I did a number of HIIT programs and I lost about 60 or 70 pounds over a 9-month period, lost all this weight. And then I said to myself, well, what can I do with this now? Mm-hmm. And so I started putting myself to different tests, and I started doing Spartan races initially. And my 26-year-old, who was 14 at the time when I started doing these, he and I started doing them together, and we flew all around the United States because I was traveling for work. So I had a lot of free flights and hotels and stuff. And so we would travel all around the United States doing Spartan races. I've had 9 knee surgeries. So I just at one point figured, after having to wear a knee brace when I was doing these races, that maybe it wasn't the best use of my time and risk. And so then I started doing triathlon because, you know,
that's the
natural progression. And
I would have moved on to getting a library card, but good for you, Matt. Well done.
And then I did, so over the course of the next like 6 years, I did 17 half Ironman, and I did one full Ironman. And it's probably the only statement after a race that I've made that I've stuck to. And I said, I crossed the finish line, I looked at my wife and I said, that is the dumbest blank I've ever done. I will never do that again. And I, to date, have never done an Ironman, and I will never do a full Ironman.
Which one did you do?
I did Louisville.
I was going to guess Louisville, which is no longer there.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Well, so there's a half. We have a half now. They brought a half back last summer.
Yeah.
But I did the in 2016. So it was October. After they moved it out of August into October, had great weather. I dropped chain and broke my chain at mile 40 on the bike. And stood on the side of the road for 30 minutes, got my bike fixed, and I was stuck in the small ring for 70 miles. And there was no torque. I was basically just along for the ride on the downhills. And by the time I got to the run, my legs were toast. It took me 14 hours, 29 minutes, and 4 seconds, but I don't know who's counting.
That's not bad.
Finished. I'm losing an hour.
Yeah,
on the side
exactly.
Of the road. That's not so bad. And then I never liked running, so I forced myself to start running because I really wanted to start running. And what actually my very first dopey was in 2017, the year they canceled the half marathon. Mm-hmm. You guys probably remember that. We can't because of the storms that came through on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And I signed up for that one because I had heard about it. I was like, that sounds like a lot of fun. And I was training for my Ironman. I said, well, I will be trained up for an Ironman, so it's only 3 months more training. Why not just continue to run and work out and just go right into the dopey? Finished my dopey, and I said, you know, I feel like I really should do it again because I didn't get to do the whole 48 miles because of the canceled half. Even though I did run on the treadmill.
Did you do a half or no?
I did some running.
Okay.
So I had my whole family with me, so I did a ton of walking that week. I think I probably put about 100 miles on my legs that week. I ran like 5 miles on the treadmill. We were staying at Animal Kingdom. And then we went to the park, and I told my wife, I said, I want to be back in the room in bed by 7:30. At 9:30, we were still walking out of Epcot, and I was livid.
Yep.
But I went and I ran, and it was very cold that next morning. But I finished, and I said, you know, I feel like I should do it again. And so I signed up for it again, and my whole family went with me again. We had bought into DVC, so we stayed at a 2-bedroom at Bay Lake. It was nice, spaced out. I didn't wake everybody up when I was leaving at 2 a.m.
You should, though. They made you stay at Epcot till 9:30. I'm just being honest.
Right?
I should not make coffee when my 4-year-old is sleeping in Disneyland next to the coffee maker, but I make coffee, sometimes 2 cups.
But I would think, because you guys are the talent, they would have coffee waiting
for
you.
They do, but I don't like it.
She doesn't care for the coffee. She doesn't like it. And she likes the coffee in the hotel, and I'm exactly the opposite. I think the coffee in the hotel is...
The creamer's in my hotel room.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Peppermint mocha creamer, okay.
We're off. There we go.
I'm sorry. But you got up quietly, didn't wake everybody up.
Yeah. So we did the second, and I'm sitting in the airport, and I looked at her and I said, "You know, I'm done. I've done it. I don't need to do it again. And I feel good about it." And my phone rings literally after the words are out of my mouth. My phone rings, and it's one of my buddies, and he says, "Hey man, I saw that dopey thing that you just did. What is that?" I told him, and he goes, "I want to do that with you." And I said, "Well, it's too late. I'm never doing it again." Well, systematically over the next few weeks, he's worked me and convinced me to sign up again. And I'm now signed up for my eighth. It became the joke of my family. After every time I ran one, they'd be like, "Oh, Dad says he's not doing it again." And I would sign up. And now it's just it, we're we, we've all recognized the fact that I will be doing it every year till I one day I'll just say I'm done. But you know, that actually leads into kind of the main reason you guys brought me on today. It was about the flag. And so when I started running with the flag about 7 years ago, 6, 7 years ago, it changed my demeanor about running these races. Obviously, I love coming down there. I love Expo Day. I love seeing all my old friends. And it's so great when we see people we only see once a year or maybe twice a year because of the different races that you go to. But going out there and just being the guy with the flag, that's how a lot of people know me. Oh, the guy with the flag.
You're Matt the Flag Guy. You're
Not the
Matt the
worst thing
Flag
to
Guy.
be known as, not like the jerk in Corral D. I mean, or
That's
the
true.
sociopath. There's a sociopath. I don't know who the jerk in Corral D is, but please identify yourself. We will bring you on the
Yeah,
podcast.
that's not me. Oh, is there? Oh, is
No,
that a
I don't
thing?
know.
I
I
didn't know that
just
was a
made that
thing.
up, but I'm sure somebody is.
Oh yeah,
Oh, I'm
there's always
sure,
a thing.
right?
There are
There's
plenty
always
of
that
famous.
guy. So you know, carrying the flag, I get, and I think John alluded to as we first came on. The stories that I get told along the way and the messages I've gotten along the way, or even like it was actually funny. I've almost become like, and I just say this kind of just tongue in cheek, but I'm almost coming at my own character stop because I'll be running and people come up to me and go, "Can I get a selfie?" And that people, and I'll put the flag behind me so they get the flag. And I mean, I'd say at least a half a dozen or more times per race, I get stopped to do a picture or. And I've had people come up to me and say, "Would you mind if I run with the flag for a moment for my brother who died, or my uncle, or my aunt, or my whoever?" And I say, "Of course, you know, by all means." I said, "Just don't leave me. Don't run off with my flag." But I mean, it's not about me per se anymore. I don't think it is at all. It's about the message that I get to carry with the flag because we can all disagree on our Facebook pages and all over social medias
It's very easy to do.
And that's totally okay. Everybody's allowed to have those feelings, but at the end of the day, we get to go out and run these races because of the country that we live in and because of people who've laid their lives on the line for us, people who sacrificed years of their life to go serve their country and for what this country represents. And that's why I do that. I don't do it to be have a political message one way or the other or anything like that. That's not the reason I do it. I do it because I'm a veteran. Veteran issues are very, very close to my heart. And I can tell that my interactions with you guys through the years shows that it's the same with you guys. You know, Riley, you know, today or before the, I think it was the half, pulled me aside. He was talking about how he lost power during the hurricanes this year. And he's like, "You know, it makes me feel stupid because, you know, we've got guys living in the desert in tents for 9 months of the year with no power." And he goes, "I went 6 days without power and I felt like my world was going to end." And the realization, the understanding that you guys represent and the feeling that you bring to it, the attention that you call out to me, tells everybody in the crowd that you guys care about it and that it's not a silent, you know, battle people go through.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's indicative, and we all have our different politics. But I think it's hard to remember, and I'm guilty of it as well, to remember what we're just disagreeing about how we solve problems that we see. So I think if we ever just approach it, that's what we're just disagreeing on our solutions. And I think the heated rhetoric is not great. That's why I think what you do, again, in a non-political way, just say, "Hey, this is about the people who signed up and put in their time, and whether they." Put in their time, like my dad was a Navy veteran and never got more than 125 miles away from his home in Washington, D.C., and ended up as an Admiral chauffeur. Some people end up halfway across the world in combat, but these are people who stood up at a time. And he was a World War II veteran. He joined underage in the summer of 45, like a lot of kids
What
did
everybody did at that
My
time back
grandpa did
then.
too.
Yeah.
Yep, lied to
And
his mom.
so I think that's indicative to remember. But I want to jump back to a couple of things.
Because we're going to go back to the veterans, because we want to make sure we talk about them. We're not. I don't think we're done talking about Disney, are we, John?
No, we're not done talking about Disney. But I also want to point out, because I want to ask that question. I want to ask about your Disney history, Matt. But I do need to point out that you said you joined the Navy and you went to basic training. Some people may not know that used to happen. There used to be three places for that: San Diego, Great Lakes, Illinois, and Orlando, Florida. And two of those are gone now, and one of those is Orlando, Florida. So, what is your Disney history, and did you add to that at all with your basic training here in Central Florida?
So, yes, I did go to Orlando, basic training in Orlando. And so, yes, I did. So my history with Disney goes all the way back to when I was growing up. My grandparents lived in Vero Beach, Florida. I'm one of five boys, and we would load up every year at Christmas time, sometimes at Christmas, but always at spring break. We would load up in a conversion van, two and a bench in the back, and we would stake out our spots in the van, whether it be on the floor. Back when you used to be able to sleep on the floor of a vehicle, no one freaked out. You know, we would lay the bench down into a bed. Two people would be on that. Someone would be underneath it. We had kids everywhere. We would all bring friends, and we'd have like eight kids in this car, and we would drive to Vero Beach, Florida every year for spring break. And almost always, we either on the way down or on the way back, we would stop and spend one day at the Magic Kingdom. And I just remember doing that as a child with my family, and just remember just the fun, just going to the theme park. And my dad would tell stories about when he took my older brothers back when you would get the book of tickets, and you would get your premium pass, and you would, which would give you this, like, in today's realm, because kids today don't even have any clue. Actually, what I actually joke about this, we'll get to this in a minute, but you know, like, that would get you on Space Mountain and Tiana's, and then you only got one of those tickets, and then you would get a second one that would get you on, you know, Small World or Peter Pan, and then all the way down to the carousel, what have you. And then if you wanted to ride those rides again, you had to go buy another book. And so that's when he started taking my brothers, and then it became the all-inclusive ticket where you bought the $100 ticket back when it was $75 for a ticket, and you could go to the park all day long. And then you got more and more expensive. Now we're at the $200 ticket, and you now you have to buy a book of tickets in order to ride the ride.
Yes.
They've gone full circle in 65 years.
Right. You know, nothing changes. It just goes around in circles.
Now it just costs more. Now you pay the $200 to get in, and then you're buying the $400 ticket to be able to get the front of the line, right? But anyway, look, hey, I love it. And so I grew up just loving going down there and having great memories. So memories, that's what it linked to, right? It was the memories of my family and when I was growing up and little kid and my mom. And then when I was in middle school, my best friend moved to Orlando, Florida, and I would go down and visit him from time to time. And we would go, and that was right after Epcot. So this is like early 80s, right? So the Epcot's open in Magic Kingdom, and all the parks are slowly starting to build parks. And then I went to boot camp in 93 in Orlando. Now, we did not, so at the end of boot camp, you get to select one place to go. And we wanted to go to Wet n Wild. The kids, everybody else in the group wanted to go to Wet n Wild. So that's where we ended up going. And then after graduated boot camp, went to Magic Kingdom. And then I came back for A school in Orlando for a while before I transitioned to a different MOS. But I did start at the Nuclear Power School, and so I went to Disney World a bunch. But as I'm sure you're aware, the Navy base was, you know, 45 minutes away from the Magic Kingdom. So it's not like we could just jump in a car and go over. It was a day event if you were going over there. And then as I got older, I started having kids, and my older two didn't get to go to didn't go till they were in there probably 8 or 9 years old. And I had now divorced from their mom, and we kind of had an agreement. We couldn't take them to the Magic to Disney World without the other one being involved. So my now wife was with us, and it was a very strange trip. But we did our own thing; they did their own thing. But we got to spend time with the kids. And so as my kids have all grown older, Disney's just been a big piece of how I've raised my children. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell the story a couple years ago. We did New Year's at Epcot, and my kids. We did this. You know, have you ever been in New Year's at Epcot on New Year's?
No, I've been invited and I haven't gone because we always have marathon weekend and I'm always afraid to push it to the limit. But I've seen plenty of videos that it's crazy, right?
Oh my gosh, it's so cool. So they do the fireworks at 9 o'clock, the regular Epcot fireworks, and then each one of the individual lands in Epcot has their own party going on, a dance party, what have you. Like I remember in England when we were there, they had like a silent DJ back in the back corner right there, and it was just a blast. And then the fireworks went off at midnight. Well, about 5 minutes to midnight, they start all of the lands launch off fireworks in the order in which they celebrated their new year based on the real clock, or based on a real clock.
Cool.
And then at midnight, they do the Auld Lang Syne and they blow off the fireworks at Epcot. And we were standing right outside Rose and Crown. My kids are there looking, and the looks on their faces was just like amazement. The sky lit up, and they still get that feeling. And my kids have been to Disney World, I mean, a lot. we had annual passes from Kentucky for like 4 years, and now I have an annual pass every year because I come down for the runs. Mm-hmm. But they've been a lot. And like when my son, who's now 16, when he was 7, I think, or 8, I just threw him on a plane one day and flew him down there. He had no idea where we were going until we got on the plane, and we just started doing that. So a little bit of local flavor as well. Locals don't stay in town for the Derby. We leave. We get out of here if we can. And so every year the kids are off school on Friday. So the teachers union has negotiated their closed. The schools are closed on Friday. So they do a half a day on Thursday and it's all Derby events. And then everybody's partying for the Derby all weekend. We would leave on Thursday, at least me and one of my kids, my son for the longest time now, my daughter. We would leave on Friday or Thursday afternoon, and we would go to Disney World for the weekend. We'd stay at the DVC, or I would use my Hilton points from my travels for work, and we had annual passes or what have you. So it was almost just as inexpensive to do that as it was to do anything else, because the flights were free, hotels were free. So we started just doing that a ton. And then I've done, of course, all the races. I've done now 7 wine and dines. I'm coming up on my 8th Dopey. I did my very first Springtime last year. I've done the Princess a couple times. I did Star Wars before they got rid of Star Wars. I'm actually doing Princess this year with my daughter, who's 11. She wanted to run a 5K. Nice. So I said to her, this is funny. I go, you're going to have to miss school, you know? And she goes, I care as why. My wife was like, well, it's because somebody's gonna have to do the homework with her. I'm like, well, that's not my job. I think I have to travel on that Monday. That's 3 months. I don't know if I travel or not, but it obviously becomes a joke. And so on a side note, I'm sure you guys have seen me in shorts, so you've seen my legs are covered in tattoos and stuff. After every race, I choose a character from one of those races and get it tattooed.
So after all my legs, every all my race tattoos.
Yeah, so
like all race my weekend race, or individual race.
Every race weekend.
Still a lot, though.
But I mean, I have over about 40 tattoos.
Yeah,
on my whole legs are covered all the way up and down. I'm actually this Friday, I'm getting my Remy for Wine and Dine, okay. And then I'm doing my very first Disneyland races this year. So I will get the Dumbo Challenge double
cool,
dare.
Very cool.
So I've got a big spot, I think, on my left, hamstring area that I'll be getting Dumbo on.
When does John Pelkey's face make it like?
Yeah, we should get some. I should get Pelkey Face, shouldn't I?
Like, excuse me.
Me with my arm around Thomas O'Malley, the alley cat.
I know all these characters, that's... but what is that grumpy guy? Yeah, you say it's the guy from the Muppets. No, it's one of the guys from the Muppets.
He's the guy in the that's up in the the rafters of the Muppets yelling at the Muppets.
Yep. All right. So
Pelkey's face when I handed him my flag going into Epcot last year.
I know. I'm so glad you decided to run Springtime because I got to run with the flag for about. I think you gave me credit for 100 yards. I think it was closer to 12, but. All right, I'll take the 100 yards at that point. By the time when I held on to that, at that point, I don't think there was any oxygen in my brain. But that was a really cool experience and reiterated what we always say to you is, I don't know how you hold the damn thing up for all of those miles. I skipped arm year in the gym.
I think
gym
it goes back to that military background, all of that.
Could be. Could very well be.
And so I just want to say something about Disney, which I think is interesting in this podcast, and then we're going to move on to the flag. But when we talk to a lot of people, our question is always like, when did you kind of get into Disney? And for the people who are more mature, as you and John, it really is like an East Coast proximity situation.
She call us old.
No, it is because you're saying you're going to put your kid on a flight. And I think back when John was young, that was a luxury to fly. Right. So for the kids that lived on the East Coast that are, 50 plus, it was a driving thing. It wasn't, if it was a really important thing. And then that magic carried to the kids. So I think you really see that connection. And being an East Coaster myself, it was something that my dad was a pilot. So we were able to do that and fly. So it's always interesting to see where that Disney sort of genesis comes from. I want to know about the flag. When did the flag become consistent and visible and sort of something that you couldn't do a run Disney race without? How did that come about?
So I want to say it was 2018 or 19. So there's a gentleman that runs with the flag traditionally in everything from 1 mile races and up to, I think he does up to 10Ks now. He might do up to half marathon. His name's Sid Bush. Phenomenally nice guy. He was a senior chief in the Navy. He was on submarines. He and I are friends on Facebook. We've communicated a lot on Facebook. And he carries a flag And every single he does, every single race he does. And I also, Andy Dalby is another gentleman who ran Dopey with me a few years ago and carried the flag the whole thing
as well. Is body paint Andy or a different Andy?
I'm sorry?
It's not body paint Andy.
No, no,
okay,
no,
that's
so.
A different one. That's a lot going on at one time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it's not body paint Andy. No. Okay, I got what you're saying. No, it's Andy Dalby, and he runs with the American flag as well. And I ran with it, and I came home, and I said, gosh, the feeling that I got running with the flag and just being able to get the get stories out of people and have people talk. Cause some people just want to tell their story, right? Mm-hmm. Some people are afraid to get talk to the microphone. I have zero fear of that. I think you guys have seen that. Zero fear whatsoever. I have no problem talking to strangers. That's why I'm good at what I do. I'm in sales, and that's, you know, I have zero problem talking to pretty much anybody. It's a good balance, yin yang, with my wife, who doesn't really care for people. That's a joke. And so I carried the flag, and I had a number of people tell me just amazing stories. I think the first year I ran with, I had like a British national who had become an American, who became a Navy nurse, who told me some of her stories. I think if you guys have listened to some of the other stories I've told, the best one that I have was Wine and Dine. And I can't remember what year it was, but you know, it was when the half marathon went through Animal Kingdom. For Wine and Dine. So I can't remember what year that was. But anyway, as we're coming out from Nemo, and we're going into the dinosaur area back where the Triceratops is, and the shops are on the right-hand side.
Right.
There was a bunch of cast members there and volunteers kind of marking the course. And I came around the corner, and I had my flag, and there was a guy, and he was, a World War II veteran, older gentleman, who was using one of those walkers that has a seat in it. And he was sitting in it, you know, with his yellow shirt on, kind of pointing people in the right direction. And he saw me coming, and I saw his hands go to the edge of his walker, and he came to full attention and came to a full salute and saluted me as I went by. I mean, as I tell the story now, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
Yeah.
And it was just so cool that it wasn't me. He wasn't saluting me. He was saluting the flag. And that's what matters. And I also think about one time I was in the Baltimore airport. I'm walking through the airport, and I had like 2 hours to kill in a layover. So I just did laps. I don't sit. I just do laps. And I was doing laps, and there was a gate, and there was an honor flight. And so an honor flight is where a local community will go together, and they'll get 200 World War II veterans, or how many ever they can get. And they'll put them all on one flight, and they'll fly them to DC, and they take them down, and they take them to all the monuments. And it's just a really neat event to do for our elderly veterans. And I stopped, and I walked, and I shook every single person's hand. I walked around, and I just said, thank you. And then I just grabbed my bag, and I kept going. And to me, it was just my small way of continuing to honor the sacrifice, because we say it, and this is true. Every person who signs up for the military writes a blank check. That blank check is up to and including their life.
Yeah.
And you know that when you go in, you could die doing this job, whatever it is, whether you're on the front lines shooting a weapon, or whether you're in the middle of the Arabian Sea, you know, launching aircraft, you could die. And everybody does that knowing. Now, some people expect it a little bit more based on the different jobs they do in the military, but to be an 18-year-old, which I was when I signed up, most people are in their 18 to 21 age. And obviously you're looking for a change in life, and going into the military changed me and made me the man I am today. And I would never, ever change having served my country and what I did. But to make those decisions, knowing the gravity of what it is that you're accepting, pulling up on your shoulders, especially over the last 30 years or 20 years, as we've been, you know, since 9/11 and the wars that we've been in, and the harm's mm-hmm. way we've put our soldiers, and to go out and fight those battles, and you know, these kids come home with demons that we will never know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And to hold that flag in these races, because I'll be honest with you, some of it, I mean, I do continue to do these races because it's therapeutic to me in my mind.
Yeah.
I get out there and I'm quiet. I have my headphones on, but I'm listening to a book, or just to give you a little bit of insight. The first two songs I listen to before every single race is The Grind, which is Welcome to the Grind. If you've ever heard that, like, you mm-hmm. know, you're doing something that very few people do. That's the very first song on my playlist. And the second one is Chris Stapleton's The National Anthem. Those are the first two songs on every playlist that I have when I'm going to run. And those are the first two songs. So as soon as I get done talking to Riley or I'm waving at you guys as I go by, hit play. Those are the first two songs I hear on every single playlist before every single race. And it's not about it's, you know, these kids come home with these demons, and to, when I go out there, it's therapeutic for me, and to see the flag and to know that, you know, everybody's politics, like we alluded to earlier, everybody's politics can be different, but we, you know, people appreciate what it is that has been sacrificed, whether you lost somebody or whether, you know, you yourself made the sacrifice and you're coming back and you have damage somewhere in your body or in your mind, that, you know, recognizing that our veterans need that support and that love, you know, like I said last year, when Riley asked me, you know, the number 22 a day, you know, or, you know, an hour, I can't remember the number now, but it's, we have way too many of our soldiers that are coming home and committing suicide. And those numbers, we got to get that down. We got to help people, you know, and showing people love and just showing, hey, we care about you and we love you. And thank you so much for what you've done.
Yeah. I want to go back to kind of something you mentioned, the World War II veteran who stood up. I think, unfortunately, and maybe you feel this and you can elaborate on it, we have a massive gap of the way that our elders respected the military and what that job was. And I feel like today's generation really doesn't, and maybe I'm wrong, have though the same respect for not just our veterans, but you're saying veterans now, and a veteran can be a 19-year-old kid. Do you know what I'm saying? I just feel like, absolutely. And what you do, I think, is important because we don't have the same respect because I think we let politics get in the way. And at my house, when we grew up, if the national anthem came on, an Olympics, anything, everybody in the house stood up and was quiet.
That's how we are in my house.
And yep. And now that you can barely get people, you know, John does a moment of silence. And so, I mean, I don't have a question for that, but I just want to thank you for what you're doing, because I think we need to continue to remind people that no matter what your political belief is, that your respect for the people who write that blank check, you know, needs to be there. Right, John?
Yeah. And also understanding, and again, I'm so glad you brought it up, Matt, understanding about mental health, because in addition to veterans' mental health issues, you're there on the weekends, you hear the other interviews. The running community is really one of the few places where I think you find a lot of people, you know, some people it's very easy not to see injuries that aren't physical. Mm-hmm. And right. I think there are a lot of areas where people don't really understand the mental health. And I think in the running community, it's one place where, you know, your story is unique as is. Also, you tell some things a lot of people talk about. I started running because I looked at myself and, oh my gosh, I'm out of shape. You know, a lot of people, I started running because I was in a bad headspace. Mental health is something that we really need to shine a light on across the board. And again, for the people who, to your point, and I love the way you said that, they sign a blank check. And the least part of that blank check, maybe you're going to go through some physical hardship, probably get yourself in a little better shape, get up earlier in the morning than you wish you were, live someplace you didn't want to live. But on the other end of that is you could lose your life, and you could lose your life as an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old. It doesn't matter. So I think that is really important. I also think that the families of people who sacrifice are often forgotten. I want you to talk a little about the Gold Star Initiative, because that is something I know that's very close to your heart. And I think is one of the more important ways that we can start to learn about. It's very easy to look at large things in the macro and not be affected by them. But when you get down to the micro of, this is the person we lost, this is what this person, well, this is a human being that's no longer with us for this reason, and we're going to celebrate them and their sacrifice. So talk a little about the Gold Star Initiative.
Yeah, so I want to go back to the very first time I ran for a Gold Star family. So it was Ironman Chattanooga 2020, might have been 2019 or 2021. I can't remember which, but it was in May, and I had been chosen as a Gold Star athlete. And what that meant was I was going to carry the flag for a Gold Star family. So, I went down to Chattanooga. I got to meet the family. We did some press and did lunch. And then she handed me the veteran I ran for, his name, Offren Arashaga. He was in the army, and his widow handed me his dog tags that I then wrapped her. Cause I was going to be carrying a flag on a half Ironman. I was going to go ahead and wear a camelback. I don't normally like wearing a camelback, but I was going to wear one just to free my hands up to not carry a bottle. And so I wrapped his dog tags around the shoulder strap of my camelback. I came back in from the bike and I went to go out and for run. They handed me the flag and I went and I ran. At the end, her son, who was, I believe, 2 years old when his father was killed in Afghanistan, who is now he's 16, 17, 18 years old now. At the time, was like 14 years old. He was the same age as my son. So I guess he's 16, 17. They met me at the finish line and I handed them that flag back along with the dog tags. And it, to hear his story, and it, there's a documentary out there called The Hornet's Nest. And it was a documentary filmed by some very well-received, well-honored military war correspondents. And that during that filming was when Offren was killed. Now, he was not killed on camera. There were a few other guys that were shot on camera, but he was killed at an outpost and then brought back in. And they showed the military honoring funeral that they do, where they take their gun and they stand it up inside the booth with the helmets, and the everybody from the unit goes by and says goodbye. I mean, it's extremely powerful. And so that's the very, very first time that I ran for a family. Okay. And so since then I've run and I've done it, and I've always, called out to military veterans and to Gold Star families, and I've tried to raise money here and there. This year I decided to get real, real serious about it. And I partnered with a group called Operation 300, which is a camp for Gold Star families, Gold Star children, in Southern Florida. And it started in honor of Aaron Vaughn, who was a Navy SEAL who was killed in Extortion 17, which was the largest single day loss of life for the Navy SEALs. It was a Chinook helicopter that was shot down in the hills in Afghanistan. We lost a number of guys, and they were in Endeavor, which is, if you're familiar with any of the levels of the Navy SEALs, they were the top of the top Navy SEALs. These were the guys that, the group of guys that went and got Bin Laden, things like that. That was this group of guys. Aaron was killed, and his sister and brother-in-law started this camp. And what they do with this camp is they bring these kids down and they put them in a camp for a week, and they just get to be kids. They get to go out and they get to throw rocks in ponds. They get to swim. They get to shoot BB gun. They get to do all kinds of things of just being children. And then the surviving spouse, which about 98% of them are women in this case, go to like a hotel and they're pampered in a spa for the weekend. And they get to just kind of relax and just kind of let the pressures of being both a mom and a dad go for a little while. And then at these camps, they partner these kids up with military mentors who then can act as a father figure as these kids grow up. Because some of these kids lose their dad when they're 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. And they don't know how to tie a tie. They don't know how to shave. They don't know how to change a tire in a car. Those are the types of things that, as they get these mentors and they grow up, I mean, it becomes, as the old adage goes, it takes a village. It becomes a village of people around these kids to keep them pointed in the right direction and help them out. And so that's what this camp was started as. And so this year I partnered with Operation 300, and I've done a couple of really cool raffles. I actually raffled off every single one of my American flags. Allegiance Flag Company was so kind and sent me 20 American flags. That the real nice 3x5 hand sewn made in North Carolina flags. They sent me 20 of those to use for my races, and I sold every single one of them. We raised about $150 per flag. So I raised a couple thousand dollars just on my flags alone. over the course since July, I've raised almost $8,000 for Operation 300 just through different events. I had a friend of mine who makes t-shirt quilts, and she gave me one for free, and I raffled off a t-shirt quilt, and I made about $500 off of that. And I've just done all kinds of different things to try and raise money. A bunch of my colleagues have given a decent amount of money. Had one of my physicians that I work with, who was so generous, gave $1,000 donation to support Operation 300. Just, it's been really nice to just the support that I've gotten, and then to go out and, I meet people at the races and they tell me about Operation 300. How do I get involved, or how can I donate money? And, what can I do to help that group out, or what can I do to help another Gold Star family or Gold Star organization out? And that's what it's about. Operation 300 is a wonderful, great group of people, super small charity that doesn't have a whole lot of national funding that I was happy to, help them out. But, even if it's just a matter of going and, donating your time at the USO, if you happen to have a USO close by, or if you, go and do something at the DAV or something like that. I mean, those are things that really make a lasting impact. And my goal here is just to try and make a lasting impact. I love the fact that people recognize me as the flag guy, not as they do Matt, the flag guy, but they don't know Matt Bowen, my background, Louisville, Kentucky. They know that's the guy that runs with the American flag. And It's actually funny. I had people say to me, "You're on my bingo card." And it's because they'll do a bingo card of who's running in character. And then there was always the one, you know, find the guy running with the flag. Oh, yeah, you know, check me off on their bingo card. Because it's they call it the Run Disney bingo card. You know, how many times or what goofy outfit is John in this year or something like that. It's, you know, it's those things. Or is Carissa running this year? Check that off if you check.
Just don't check it anymore. Just don't worry.
I wouldn't say don't take that one for a while. She hasn't been in the mix for a while.
Are you out?
We just need to do our jobs, apparently.
Huh?
We're supposed to do our job.
They can only let so many of us run in a season, and everybody thinks it's funny to get the fat guy here running the 5Ks and the 10Ks. So the in-shape person trying to get a PR is not as important as the guy with high cholesterol who really needs the exercise.
Apparently he's more inspiring than me. Who knew?
I'm just kidding.
I do know that. And it's... We are always aiming to get you to that next finish line, and we've created an exciting opportunity for you guys coming up with Galloway Customized Training. Check the show notes for more information on how to sign up, and here's Chris with a little more about Customized.
Hi, I'm Chris Twiggs, Chief Training Officer at Galloway Training Programs and coach of Galloway Customized Training. When Jeff Galloway and I put together Customized Training, our goal was to offer the best value in professional coaching for runners and walkers. Starting from a questionnaire to determine your current fitness, goals, and commitments to family and work, I build a schedule that's perfect for you, but it doesn't end there. Each week, with your feedback, I adjust your plan to help you reach your goals, and I introduce you to a worldwide family of customized runners and walkers who are cheering you on. I look forward to working with you and to being your coach and your biggest fan as we run, walk, run with Galloway Customized Training.
But okay, we want to talk, we want to kind of transition from all the great work that you do to the insides and outs, right, John, of a Run Disney weekend and what that's like for you. We want to know the questions maybe people haven't asked before, John.
Yeah, and we have to ask this because Carissa put in earlier, and I had a question in that I actually took out, but I'm going to throw it back in, and that's as a former safety patrol officer in elementary school, Forestdale Elementary School, Springfield, Virginia, go Falcons. Way back in the mid 70s, I was in charge of my office. I was in charge of the flag and taking care of the flag. And I learned a lot. And I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area with, you know, a lot of military around. So I understood the taking care of the flag. We want to know about the travel with the flag. And also, I want to fold that in as a two part question.
That was my question. I was very interested in that. But I like John's question, too.
Yeah, but my question is also about not only that, but any sort of ritualistic things that you do in the morning before a race with the flag.
Okay, so traveling with the flag is fairly simple. My father-in-law made me a two-piece pole that comes across in the middle. It's PVC. I've wrapped the handle with bike tape so it's easier to grip, but it just pops apart, and that way I can fold it and fit it in my luggage. Now, it is large, and I do have to check the bag that it's in because it's bigger.
Okay.
I've drilled some holes in it, and I use I used to use zip strips, but now I use like metal cable ties that actually tighten down that hold the flag a little tighter. That's the travel question. Now, before Allegiance graciously donated all of these flags, I would just roll my flag. And so, interesting enough, one of the little rituals is my daughter a few years ago had a whole hair thing done for the Halloween party. And I have all of the little fabric hair ties, like a dozen of them in my Dodd kit. And I take those and I wrap those around the top of the flag so I can keep it rolled up. And then before I go run, I take that off and I put it on my wrist. And I run, and at the end of the race, if you've ever seen me after I cross the finish line, I stop and I step aside and I start rolling it up because the flag is not allowed to touch the ground, right? Yes. So you got to be very, very careful about the flag touching the ground.
Right.
And so I hold it up above my head and I roll it up and I take that fabric tie or that hair tie off of my wrist and put it back on the top of the flag. So that way I can keep the flag gathered up. So, because, you know, as we're going out of the race, we get our medals, mm-hmm. we get the food box and the waters and the Gatorades and everything. So I always want to make sure I have the flag well secured before I start going through those lines, because I don't want anything to happen to the flag as I'm going out. As far as ritualistic, I mean, in regards to the flag or just the way I prepare in the morning?
Well, you could take us through, race morning for you, because it's always interesting to us. And then you have this extra added thing that you have to pay attention to. And okay. I'm just wondering what your long sleepless day is like.
I get up around 2 a.m. And I have a DVC, I always stay in a DVC room, so I have a kitchen, and I'll get up and I'll make myself a couple eggs with some toast and some avocado.
Good for you.
And like some sort of smoothie or some sort of like maybe some chocolate milk or just
this
something like that.
This is the first prepared breakfast I've ever heard of on a Run Disney morning.
No doubt. Oh, yeah. You win prepared breakfast.
I make the eggs. I make fried eggs fresh every morning. Now,
wow. This even year, a 5K
I'm gonna
morning?
I'm going to future up a little bit more. Huh?
5K morning too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're coming over.
Expo morning. On expo morning.
Well, but that's a little later.
Yeah. No, but no. Yeah. 5K morning. Absolutely. What I have found when I don't do that and all I do is try and have a liquid breakfast, whether it be coffee or whether it be just a smoothie or whatever, I find myself in those beautiful porta potties 4 and 5 times before we have to go run. When I eat a real breakfast, it's not nearly. And as a runner, Carissa, you know what I'm talking about.
You just kind of, you got to find what works for you.
Prep. And I've found that if I eat a good breakfast, like a good hearty breakfast, because it's not like I'm going to go run the minute after I eat it, right? Oof. I mean, we get in those corrals, we're standing there for an hour and a half.
We know.
Your body can digest them. Yeah. So it's not sitting in there and it's, they say you should eat a big breakfast right before you go run, because then it pulls the blood to your stomach and not your muscles. But by that point, it's now fuel. Yeah. And the whole point is to get the fuel into the body. And then I go run. So that's what I do every morning. But the night before, I will lay out my clothing like everybody does, the flat so-and-so, whatever. I use bib clips for my bib. So I'll get those all centered. And I'm very, what's the word I could use here? Very specific about the way it can't be crooked. It's gotta be centered. So I'll spend 10 minutes, 20 minutes moving my bib around, making sure it's nice and centered. And I get everything ready. So I'm ready to go in the morning. I always have the flag rolled up right next to the kitchen table or what have you, so I can grab it on the way out the door, have my headphones. And I actually saw somebody a couple of years ago said kind of a hack is to take a grocery sack, like just a regular plastic grocery sack, and carry all your stuff in the morning in that. And then before race, you wad it up and you can stick it in your pocket or in your water bottle or where have you. And then when you're done, you can pull that out and you can put your medal in your food box and everything in that. So then you're not trying to carry things like this. It makes it a lot easier when I'm carrying my flag. I've got this grocery bag that I can throw a couple of waters in, throw my Run Disney plastic cheese box in, and my banana and all that good stuff to go out. So I that's actually been really, really helpful. I don't ever bag check. Never, 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 never bag check. Never have, never will. I don't have any interest in it whatsoever.
I'm not a bag checker either. I'm not a bag. I just want to go. I want to be done. I want to be out of here. Like, what am I?
I do not know how people go straight to the parks after running.
Yeah.
I'm soaking sweaty mess. I do not know how people go right to Epcot after having run a marathon, but they do. And it's absolutely gross, because I cannot imagine. Can you imagine what those buses are like Sunday afternoon?
I can imagine. I just know what my costume smells like, and I didn't even make the run. And Carissa made the mistake of touching my fur onesie on Wine and Dine.
I didn't think he had an under. You had an undershirt on, right?
I did. Yeah.
I didn't think it would soak the fur through the back. Like, I mean, it was crazy. Wet.
And I can't imagine with the costumes that people wear and what some of the materials with those are and that stuff.
They're not breathing. Humidity, no matter what. I mean, like I ran yesterday and it was 35 degrees. It was awesome. And I thought, man, if we could only get Disney to do that in January, 35 degrees,
sometimes
no humidity.
We do.
We've done a couple of those.
We don't care for it.
And snowing. Well, years ago, we had 29 degrees and snowing.
Yeah. Now, I think 40 degrees, no humidity is perfect.
We had that year. That was good. Better for you guys than us. I have a question about when we're getting to longer races, or you talked about, you know, I'm a dietitian, all those digestion issues. Where does the flag go when you need to use the restroom and it is unfurled, let's say mile 20? Where's it going?
Okay. So, it depends. So early, almost always.
I'm sorry to ask a bathroom question, everybody. I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's a legitimate question because you can't touch the ground.
I've always wondered.
It can't touch the ground. So almost always within the first mile, I have to peel off into the trees.
Okay.
And I always start my races with like friends, and I'll say, hey, take this with me for a moment. Okay. I run intervals like your father-in-law has taught us for over the years, right? To run intervals. My intervals are probably different than his, but anyway, I would peel off and I'll just do what I got to do. It's easier for guys in that situation. And then just peel right back in. And it's always easy to find my friends because they got the flat. Now, later in the race, if I have to stop, it's generally in a park and I will go into I'll roll it up. That's why I got my hair tie on my wrist. I'll roll it up, gather it up, and I'll take the extra 10 seconds to make sure it's taken care of. And then I'll go into a stall or whatever, and I stick in the corner, and I do it, and then I go and do whatever I have to do and go. But
again, adding things to, you know, to your race that other people don't have to think about. I think that's absolutely remarkable. Do you ever stop at a character stop?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I
got. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've stopped a bunch, and you might want to edit this portion out. I've actually been told sometimes that I can't get my picture taken with some Disney characters with my flag.
No, I know they have very strict regulations. I was actually thinking the other day we were going through old pictures, and like we were announcing our pregnancy with Mickey, and he couldn't hold the shoes, like the pink and blue shoe. So
And I've only been told, like, last year with the Guardians of the Galaxy, those characters that cast members stopped me and said, we can't do your picture with the Disney camera. You can do your phone if you wanted. But I've been told with Donald, and then I've done it with Donald in the same race. So I don't know if it's cast member dependent or what have you, which is fine. I don't get all bent out of shape about it. I just take my picture and I go, you know, that's fine. I don't stop a ton. Because I have a reason behind that, and that's because it's Star Wars. When I did Star Wars a while back, as I was coming out of Animal Kingdom, they had the Hoth, the Luke Skywalker Hoth, where you basically you go and you're like this, and then they flip the picture and you're upside down.
Yeah.
And it was probably mile 9 or something like that of the, hello, hi guys. it was mile 9 of the half marathon, and I stood in line for about 20 minutes for that picture. And then I went to try and take off, and my legs were like, no, I thought we were done, man. And so I don't know.
I have always wondered about that for those long runs. And I don't think that's something we've ever hit with somebody is that, you know, for me, and you know, I'm not that great of an athlete and everything, but if I were to stop for the couple of pictures I did in the 10K were very short, getting my legs back underneath me would be very difficult.
Yeah. And mile 10 or 12, it was like mile 9 or 10 of a half marathon. My legs were like, oh, wait, I thought we were done because we stood there for 30 minutes. If I'd stand there for 10 minutes, that's one thing. And so if the lines are shorter, I'll stop. Or if I've been like easing it up, because I'll do that a lot. I mean, I say this, I've said this a number of times. If you PR at a Disney race, you're not doing it right. I mean, we pay a lot of money to enjoy the course and get in the course. And unfortunately, it's just if people complain, the course is a lot of highway miles. It's hard to map out 26 miles in a confined space, and they do the best they can. Everybody thinks there's better ways to do it. And of course definitely are better ways to do it. I'm sure they could give us more Hollywood studios. Definitely don't take us up those exit ramps, because those are the worst.
Heartbreak Hill, as my wife calls it when she's cheering as either a Sarge or one of the hooks cheering you on, calls it Heartbreak Hill. We need some level of elevation.
That's true. I'll give you that. But, we used to go to ESPN. That was mind numbing. Now I really wish I'll be 100% honest. And this is me being an armchair quarterback. I wish they would take out that whole loop around Blizzard Beach and just give us more Hollywood studios. Cause we could go into Hollywood studios instead of making it like you go, you know, in the New York City Marathon, where you just basically step foot in Brooklyn and they get you out of there. You know, we could hang a ride and we could kind of do a loop there. I understand they wanted the parks opened. Maybe with this 4:30 a.m. start, they could start looking at maybe rerouting the course. You guys got to love that, by the way. 4:30 a.m. Now, what's your call time? Midnight?
Yeah, 12. It'd either be 12 or 12:30.
So John can get his hot breakfast.
Yeah, but you know what? I will be home in my easy chair watching NFL football at kickoff, and that never happens. So there's an upside to all of it. And for the record, everyone listening, Chris and I have nothing to do with the course, we understand the Blizzard Beach thing because we hear that from everybody.
I ran the Jingle Jungle 5K when we did the parking lot in Animal Kingdom just because you had to, and I get it. That's not exciting. And by the time it's hot, it's really not fun. But at this point, can you just guys enjoy Blizzard Beach because you hate it so much? I think you got to like it because it's so terrible. Like, it's a thing. Right. So kind of like John.
People, when people complain, I'm like, look, guys, we're running a marathon we paid money for at Disney World. These are first world problems. Yeah. These are not real problems. These are not real problems. Okay. There are real problems out there. These aren't real problems.
Yeah.
And so let's keep that into perspective.
No, and I think you do such a great job illustrating for people, particularly for veterans and active duty military and anybody involved in the military, their families, what real world problems are versus what we get to do and what you guys who are the athletes out there doing dopey and everything, what you get to do. Thanks for spending time with us, Matt. Now we're going to move on to the three questions that we ask everyone at the end. Same questions everybody gets. So, Matt Bowen, Matt the Flag Guy, in case everybody's like, who's this Bowen guy?
They've been listening this long and they didn't grasp that. We got to get another question.
Well, you know, they could be on the treadmill not paying that much attention. When you get to a hard place in a workout, how do you motivate yourself or eat or run? How do you motivate yourself to keep going?
So before I start any workout, I have a goal. I'll set a goal for whatever I'm looking for. Let me just use yesterday as an example. I had 18 miles on the schedule yesterday for my dopey training. And I went out and I just said to myself, in my mind, I'm like, I don't know if I can do 18 miles today. If I could get 12 or 14, I'd be super happy. And then I said, no, you've got 18. And so no matter how tired you get, you don't quit until you're done. And so I don't quit when I'm tired. I quit when I finish. Or I'm done. I'm sorry. I said that wrong. I don't quit when I get tired. I quit when I finish. And my finish was 18 miles. Incidentally, I went 19.02 miles because I overguessed in my head and didn't and went too far away from my car and had to turn and go back. So I picked up an extra mile. in me personally, it's setting goals beforehand, whatever those goals may be, whether it be a calorie goal, whether it be a time goal, whether it be a distance goal. When you get tired, you got to focus on, hey, I still got to accomplish my goal. And then you chop it up. So 18 miles, you chop it up into five Ks. You know, or something like that. And then or actually 6 5Ks, you know, or you chop it up and you just start it, you put it in edible bites. Yep. You know, how do you eat an elephant? You eat it one bite at a time.
I was just thinking about that today doing my walk because I'm going to run a marathon and next Sunday. And I was like, okay, when I do my marathon, I'm not going to listen to music for the first 8 miles. Then I'll only have 16 miles. You know what I mean? Like I was in my head, you know, already doing my math.
Section it off. Yeah.
What is the most inspiring moment you've seen or heard or a story that's been told to you at a race?
So the story I told already is probably the thing that just always makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. Last year during the marathon, as I'm coming out of Animal Kingdom, so what's that, mile 18, 19? As I'm coming out of Animal Kingdom, I have a guy who catches me, who saw me get interviewed by Riley beforehand. And he said he'd been trying to catch me for 18 miles, 19 miles. And he caught me and he wanted to just tell me that it meant so much to him that I was carrying the flag because his grandfather, who was a Vietnam veteran, had died the night before.
Oh.
And he wanted to catch me to tell me how much it meant to him that I would carry the flag for veterans because he had just lost his grandpa.
Wow.
And so I said, you know, I, of course, kind of gave him a side hug. I'm all sweaty. Nobody wants to hug me when I'm sweaty. And I said, do you want to run with the flag for a moment? Bye. Do you want to run with the flag for a moment to honor your grandpa? And he said, I don't know if I can. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, you can. You can. I said, just take it and run. And I'm right here with you and we'll do it together. And he did it for a little while. And he just said, thank you so much. And I went about my day and he went about his day. But knowing that he'd been chasing me for 4 hours to get to me to tell me that story about his grandpa, you know, is one of John is in Chris is one of 24 stories that if I sat down and started writing them down, I could tell you guys, but it's one of the ones that sticks with me probably the most. And that same race, I had another one very similar to that, but that one right there is probably one that sticks with me the most.
It's just such a great story. And it really does. It's just indicative of a lot of different things about how wide a swath veterans occupy in our lives that, you know, we don't, I'm sure this guy never knew his grandfather in the military, probably no idea what this happened long after, but he knew it was something that was important. And that's such a great story. And again, yeah, you could, you need your own podcast, Matt. You can tell just dozens of these stories. And I think they're just great stories that bring us all together. If people want to follow you and they want to find out about Gold Star Initiative, Project 300, all of the things that you work with, any veterans issues that they need to work with, where's the best place to follow you on social media?
Well, I'm on Facebook, Matt Bowen under Facebook, but I'm on all the different podcast pages as a member. You and I are friends on Facebook. People could find me through you, anybody that are your friends. Operation300.org is Operation 300. Flags of Honor, Folds of Flags, you know, all of those are great veteran organizations that, you know, that we can support. If they want to find me specifically, obviously through you guys, I do get messages from time to time through Facebook or what have you. I don't do a ton of social media because I find that it becomes a suck on my life. I've got so much going on that I don't do Instagram and all of that stuff, but I do Facebook. I'm on there as Matt Bowen. I'm friends with you. I'm friends with Carissa. I'm friends with Riley, through all the pages. You know, one thing that you, if you don't mind, if I say that you alluded to earlier, we talk about the mental health issues, and obviously with veterans, it's very, very important to me. But as we go through these holiday seasons, there are people out there that are celebrating Thanksgiving, Christmas, and their first holiday seasons without their mom, without their dad, without their brother, without their sister, and they're fighting battles that you may never, ever, ever know anything about. And the person standing next to you in the line at Starbucks who's quiet may have a demon inside them that they're just battling every single day to get up and go out and do their lives. Just think about that before you say something nasty to somebody or before you respond nasty to something on Facebook. Just scroll by. If you don't like it, just scroll on by. Because there are people out there that are fighting battles that none of us will ever know anything about. And the best way to treat those and help those people is just with kindness. Treat people with kindness, treat people with a smile, pat them on the back and say, 1, 2, 3, go.
An important message, holiday season or otherwise. Matt Bowen, thanks so much for spending some time with you. We'll let everybody know in the show notes. We'll have information for all of the organizations that Matt mentioned, whether I mentioned them incorrectly or not. I don't know what Project 300 is. I'm going to have to check
Operation
300. I've made up a Project 300, so now I have to start a group. Fine, it's all good. But yeah, we'll have that in the show notes. Matt, thanks for being able to spend a little bit of time with us. I'm sure as we move forward through the season, we'll probably check in with you again and find out how things are going. And we'll see you. Gosh, what are we now away? Five?
We are 41 days away, I believe.
41. All right. 41 days away to 5 days of me getting no sleep and Matt running with the. We didn't even ask you if you had to up arm day in the gym when you started carrying the flag. So we'll cover that on the next episode. Matt, great. Thanks so much for joining us on 3, 2, 1, go. We'll talk to you down the line, man.
Hey, thanks, John. I really appreciate it.
All right, athletes. Here's the drill. Time to shape up your diet. Harissa, give them the goods.
All right, today's Healthier You, John, is a timely question. So it's like a mailbag and a Healthier You all in once. This is from Sissy, who emailed us at 321gopodcast@gmail.com because that is the email that you should email.
That's a good place to do it.
That is the place. If you don't email it to there, guess what? We'll never know.
Who knows? Somebody's like, what is this? Why do I have to answer this question about running and eating?
Don't know. What if you email it to that address? The correct
unsubscribe.
One? We may answer it. But Sissy wants to know, and I'm summarizing, but she wanted to know about immune health and getting sick after big events or long runs. And this is something that I have experienced before, and it's common to experience a temporary drop in immune function after intense exercise or a race, especially when you push it to the limit, because that's putting stress on your body. So I know we're getting into dopey. I want you guys to be able to do it happily, do it well. So just kind of giving you the why is that when it's that intense physical exertion, your body is releasing cortisol, which is that stress hormone that we hear so many things about how bad it is for us. In the short term, cortisol boosts your energy, right? But in the long term, it can suppress your immune system by lowering the activity of certain white blood cells that fight infection. So that's actually the mechanism of why it happens. You're also going to get an inflammatory response after intense exercise, which on one hand, good for muscle repair, good for adaptation. Again, though, leaves your immune system essentially busy for doing other things and they don't respond to pathogens as quickly. And then intense exercise, this is where the nutrition comes in. It uses up glycogen, amino acids, vitamins, and minerals. So if you're not refueling properly, if you're not taking care of yourself in between the dopies, getting in protein, vitamins, minerals, so I say Instacart some fruits and vegetables to your room, bring in whatever, if it's vitamin C, if it's emergency, whatever your immune booster, athletic greens, mm-hmm. bring that with you for dopey. So you're kind of fighting this off. And then also, John, are you familiar with? I just can't wait to see what you say when I say this. The open window of susceptibility.
No, but man, it sounds like it's like a Genesis album with Peter Gabriel.
I thought you were going to say like a book. But so the hours immediately after intense exercise are known as an open window where immune function, again, is suppressed. You're more susceptible to infections, particularly respiratory ones. So look, folks, if you're in dopey, we've already talked about how you're suppressing everything and then you're standing in a corral next to thousands of people who may or may not have infections. So this is why you get sick afterwards. Take care of yourselves, especially if you're doing dopey. Try to get as much sleep as you can. If you're feeling ill at all, take that extra time. You don't need to go in the parks. The parks are going to be there, but we want you to be able to enjoy it. And we can discuss immune-boosting foods and healthier you in January. If you join now, you'll be there to join with us. Use the code PODCAST. If you use the code PODCAST between now and the end of 2024, you're going to get $150 off and an individual 20-minute session with me where we can talk about the open window of susceptibility.
All right. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Before we wrap up, we want to give a special shout out to our friend Sarah Akers with Runs on Magic. Now, Sarah is a passionate Run Disney enthusiast. She loves nothing more than helping you plan those magical Run Disney weekends. But with her expertise, the possibilities are endless. Whether you're dreaming of a honeymoon escape, an all-inclusive girls trip, a boys trip to Las Vegas, a family cruise, international adventure, whatever it is, Sarah is here to make it happen. Best part? Her travel planning services are completely complimentary. Sarah creates personalized itineraries and specializes in Run Disney, Universal, and cruise vacations. And for our listeners, she's offering a special promo. Use the code 321GO when requesting your vacation quote, and you could receive up to a $200 Disney gift card or booking credit, depending on your destination. You can connect with Sarah on Instagram at RunsOnMagic for the latest offers and more, or reach out to her directly at runsonmagictravel@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Sarah, and thank you all for listening. We'll see you soon.